Net neutrality part due, NIST needs help with their bug backlog, and Microsoft Teams leaves the office to go out on its own. These stories and much more on today's episode of MSP Dispatch.
This episode is presented by OIT VoIP. Enhance your clients' communication abilities with our VoIP solution, featuring integrated billing, on-demand training, and live US support. Collaborate seamlessly with Microsoft Teams integration and put your entire phone system in your pocket with MobileX. Improve your offerings and increase profitability with reliable service for 1/10 of the average MSP acquisition cost. To learn more, visit oit.co or dial 844-CALL-OIT.
Good morning and welcome to the April 5th episode of MSP Dispatch, your source for news, community events, and commentary in the MSP channel. I'm Ray Rossini, joined as always by my co-host, Mr. Tony Francisco. How you doing, Tony?
I am doing amazing. We just got done talking about Microsoft, potential accountability, but being blamed for what MSPs are being blamed for all the time. We're constantly looking at new articles, everything from government related to local government to global to the local MSP themselves and the hero stories from there. So I'm excited about this. I'm a passionate individual about the industry that we talk about all the time. How are you doing?
I'm pretty fantastic. A little loopy. We talked about getting some of my meds dialed in. So I'm a little loopy most of the days. I was listening to myself on listening to Tuesday's episode because I do listen to our podcast, catch it on all the podcatchers. And I was listening to it. I was like, wow, I sound really slow. And I realized, I listen to everything
in 2.5x. You're in chill mode.
And it's like, dude, the news. Oh, there was a breach again, dude. MFA.
Oh, that is really funny. I had multiple people message me that every time Ray talked, I had to turn up to 1.5 speed. And then when you talked, Tony, I had to turn down to 0.75. No, I'm just kidding. I hear that I talk fast. So.
But you know what, dude? Can we get into the news?
Yeah, dude, let's do it. Jumping on my first story from Lauren Fellner at TheVerge.com. The Federal Communication Commission, the FCC, plans to vote on April 25th to reinstate net neutrality rules, which aims to reclassify internet service providers, ISPs, as common carriers. This decision would impose stricter regulations on ISPs to prevent them from controlling internet traffic by throttling or blocking content. These rules were initially implemented in 2015, but repealed in 2017, sparking debate between Republicans and Democrats. FCC Chair Jessica Rosenworcel introduced the proposal last October, emphasizing the need to restore consumer protection and maintain an open internet. And despite concerns, the FCC asserts that the proposed rules would not lead to price regulation or restrictions on speech. Supporters believe that bringing back net neutrality will make the internet safer, protect consumer rights, and ensure fair access to broadband. If approved, the rules will take effect within 60 days of publication in the Federal Register. Ray, I do believe you know something about the FCC. You've had some involvement with the FCC. I do believe you understand what's that called, the intertubes. What's it called? The internets.
Those interwebs. Yeah.
The interwebs, the tubes, that things sometimes get clogged in the tubes. If those of you don't remember the Senate or talking about that. What are your thoughts on this? You and I have had talks a long time ago about this, net neutrality, and I have a passionate opinion about it. What are your thoughts?
This is net neutrality is kind of a ping pong game. It's gone back and forth. This is going on from like Obama generation, by the way, where traditionally ISPs were not classified as common carrier, which means all the rules that the telcos had to go through with the FCC as far as what they could do, what they couldn't do, who they could offer service, who they couldn't offer service to, blah, blah, blah. they could do that because the FCC had the teeth because the telcos were a common carrier. However, fast forward to ISP, they didn't see that they needed to do that. And so ISPs were not common carrier, so it was the Wild West. Under the Obama administration, they tried to change that added net neutrality rules for a little bit, and then it was undone. Under the Trump administration, now we're back for round two or round three, depending on how you look at it. There's value to it, but my problem is the FCC, we've talked about this before, the FCC doesn't have the real teeth to do anything, right? The FTC can fine you heavily. Department of Agriculture, when you're messing around on the internet, they can fine you heavily and kick stuff over to the DOJ. The FCC doesn't have that kind of juice. So, and that's traditionally been the big challenge here, where you have the telcos and the ISPs fighting back against the FCC. And yes, the FCC is a federal organization, but they don't have the resources to smack around a multi-billion dollar giant like AT&T or like a Ring Central. So I like to see these. I do believe that there should be a Basel requirement for internet access all over the United States and Canada, but this applies to the United States. I don't think the original 10 megabits was sufficient. I don't think 25 megabits now is sufficient. So
that was gold in the day. That was gold in the day. I want to point that out.
It was fantastic.
You just blazed right by that, and I'm like, I would have killed somebody for that. Anyways,
what did Bill Gates say? 768K of RAM. That's all you'll ever
need. That's it. Forever. That's Why would you need more?
Yeah, exactly. and so the goal of this also, the internet, for those that don't know, is not entirely two-way. The way that telco works, I send you calls, you send me calls, I charge you for the calls you send me, you charge me for the calls I send you. Eventually, the traffic kind of evens out, so nobody ends up paying anybody anything at the grand scale. Internet, same thing. You're paying the other connections for access and for throughput. The problem is you have these Netflixes come in, and Netflix accounts for 70-80% of the traffic on the public internet. And so it becomes completely one-sided. And so you have these carriers or these ISPs that'll say, well, if I'm Comcast, I'm going to prioritize Comcast traffic and non-Netflix traffic to go as fast as I want. And I'll put Netflix traffic at 5 megabits down or 10 megabits down or whatever it happens to be. And so net neutrality says, no, everybody's equal on the internet. You can't do that. So I definitely love to see it. I'm sure we have some nerds out there that have opinions. Let us know in the comments. Let us know in our Discord.
Ray, I think you have a great point. My brain can't wrap around the amount of application providers, the Netflix of the world, that are coming in that have high bandwidth requirements that the carriers have to support, and they have to do it equally outside of their own applications that they're trying to support internally. The backlog of that has to be immense, and supporting that has to be incredible. How do you get help with a backlog? If there was only a story coming up about people having a backlog of items they need to go through, maybe you can talk about it.
And in my second top story, NIST wants help digging out of its NVD backlog, in a story written by Becky Bracken for Dark Reading. The National Institute of Science and Technology, or NIST, is facing challenges keeping up with the increasing number of vulnerabilities submitted to the National Vulnerability Database. Seeking additional resources from the U.S. government and private sector, NIST acknowledges a significant backlog in updating the NVD. To address this, the agency is prioritizing the most critical vulnerabilities and considering partnerships with business, government, and other stakeholders to support NVD. Experts emphasize the need to tackle the backlog and find a new approach due to the increasing growth of CVEs. Despite challenges, there's hope that if NIST and the cybersecurity industry work together, they can fix the problem and keep the NVD effective in safeguarding cybersecurity. Tony, I can't imagine how they would even keep up with it. Realistically, yeah, somebody has to review this stuff and approve it. But that also means there's vulnerabilities out there that have potentially been submitted but not reviewed yet, and so are not published yet. And so there's potential for 0 days out there. I'm extrapolating here. I'm not trying to make it, you know, the sky is falling. I didn't realize that would be a manual process.
So let's look at one of the key things that you said, Ray. And it was very subtle, but I believe it says a lot. You said to address this, the agency is prioritizing the most critical vulnerabilities. What about the ones that are really important? Not the most critical. These are really important. And there will always be the most critical. And there's in any list, there is always a first, second, and third. And since there is a constant evolutionary process and a new addition process, the path to resolution causing the attrition on the back end is clearly not running as fast as the evolutionary or new addition process, which means that the items in the middle, which through just basic stratification, add up into something more than very critical. But because there's such small slivers of each of them independently, they're not really aggregating. They're not looking at the sum of those. They're looking at them independently. And I think that causes a major issue. So the question I believe you asked is, how do we address this? I think they're onto something by open sourcing this to another entity, because they clearly can't do this internally. NIST is amazing, and we know that all the time. We're talking about NVDs. We're talking about, you know, hey, CVE 2023, CVE 21. We're constantly listing these out. How do we address the items in between? What I would like to do, to be blunt, is open it up to the MSP market, because this affects everyone equally. What are some ideas to address this? And more importantly, would NIST just create the standards, the framework, and to have an entry point of something that passes or doesn't pass, and then it's reevaluated by someone else? Consequently, those contributors could have a rating similar to, for those of you who remember, Experts Exchange and all the items where you're figuring, and then you get rated on there and your credibility goes up, kind of like a credit score, for lack of a better term, of what your contributions are. And I think that provides not just the ambient value in the background, but true tangible value as it passes through multiple layers and multiple skill sets through the very people that they're passing through, in this case, the MSPs. Now, the flip side of that is, what if you have a group of, we'll call them state actors that are intentionally passing something through multiple points, and then it just, oh, this is clear. Look, it's been cleared through five different people. All of them are a state endorsed actor. And then that maintains, but that would require resources and coordination, et cetera. So I'm pretty certain there's both sides, but I would love for the MSPs to chime in on this, see what their solutions are. Maybe we can pass these to NIST. Think about that, MSP community, passing a possible, just a string of possible solutions to NIST. The more brains, the better. Again, sorry for talking about this. I'm passionate. Ray, you got 5 seconds. Give us an answer. Go.
Take this video and share, like, and subscribe, and share it with NIST so they can weigh
in. I like that.
But Tony, for our next story, I need to unbundle my foot from my mouth. And can you do a favor and let us know what Microsoft's doing in your next story?
I will. And for those of you who don't understand that reference, please go to the outtakes, and the B footage is awesome that happens in between these scenes. Let's get into the next story. In my next story from TechCrunch.com, from Manish Singh. Microsoft has introduced updated versions of its Microsoft 365 and Office 365 subscriptions, except its Teams chat tool, following criticisms from EU regulator and complaints from Slack. Previously, Microsoft has agreed to sell Office 365 without Teams in the EU and Switzerland. The company stated that this change aims to provide clarity for customers and streamline decision-making. While Teams has over 320 million users, Microsoft is also introducing a standalone Teams offering for enterprise customers outside of the EU and Switzerland. Slack accused Microsoft of forcing Teams installations on customers, but Microsoft didn't address these concerns in its announcement. existing customers can maintain their current bundled package, including Teams, while new customers have standalone pricing options for Teams starting at $5.25 US per month. Microsoft's decision is not expected to significantly change Office 365's commercial growth trajectory. Ray, let's talk about this for a moment. I use Teams, you use Teams, we all use Teams. Does it really matter? I mean, of course, we're talking about this colloquially in the US, and there's going to be some European perspectives, and we all have our own lens. But at the end of the day, does it really matter? Will the bundling options affect the you and I of the world? That's the first question I have. And then outside of that, are we talking about dehydrated water? Is this just who cares?
Okay, this is not for those of us that are a little more seasoned and can remember the original antitrust suits that we've talked about in the past. That was about Microsoft including Internet Explorer.
Get that Internet Explorer IE off of my computer. I can't believe you do that. Sorry.
And the whole problem with that was IE was an integral part of Windows at the time. You could not uninstall IE. You had your active, active server pages. You had your active pages that, you know, relied on IE running basically in the background. So you really could not have it. And so that prompted the N versions of Windows and the different versions of Windows that did not have IE attached to it. But that is to access the public internet. That is when you get onto a Windows PC, there was no other way to get to the internet without that. Teams is not going to the public internet. You have Teams, so you can talk to other people on Teams, right? So this is not, if the other person's on Teams, you're not going to get on Google Meet to go talk to them. This is not the same thing. This is not, you know, this isn't, I like Apple, you like Android, it's not a big deal because we can still talk to each other. If I'm on Teams and you're on Zoom, we can't talk to each other via those mechanisms. So what does it matter if it's included? They didn't care about Yammer. They didn't care about half the other crap that was included and still continues to be. Nobody's complaining about Microsoft bookings. So why is Teams the thing that they're drawing the line in the sand?
First things first, I didn't hear the last 60 seconds of what you said, because as soon as you said ASP, I got these Dreamweaver shutters and for all the ones out right now, there's kids in the audience. What's Dreamweaver? They're Googling Dreamweaver. I am fascinated at how Microsoft has played certain roles and still hasn't learned. And you talked about IE, the requirements for Internet Explorer. You mentioned Yammer so subtly, but did you know that all of Microsoft's updates to all of their APIs in their Exchange environment, their hosted Exchange environment, was only done in Yammer, which means in order to get updates, you had to use Yammer. What a dirty way of doing it. So of course you just have this one application that no one liked using. And that didn't work. And then they finally opened it up to other. The point I'm trying to make is that being a little bit more open tends to be the better way of doing things. And I feel like Microsoft hasn't really dialed in on that concept yet. And they're drawing the line in the sand that continually moves arbitrarily and randomly. So I'm wondering if there's a science behind it, if there's something I'm not seeing. We could talk about this all day. We could talk about like PHP Storm and all the other stuff we use. But you know what we should also talk about? Stories. Let's get into those notables.
In my first notable mention, Google agrees to delete Chrome browsing data of 136 million users in a story written by Bill Tulis for Bleeping Computer. Google has settled a lawsuit by agreeing to delete browsing data from 136 million Chrome users in the US. The class action suit filed in 2020 accused the tech giant of tracking users despite incognito mode. Google tried to dismiss the case in 2023, but failed. The settlement terms include changes to Google's data disclosures and the deletion of billions of data records older than 9 months. Additionally, the data collected after December 2023 is subject to new disclosures. The settlement, pending court approval, also preserves class members' rights to pursue individual claims. Google denies associating data with users in incognito mode and states that it's happy to delete old technical data. If approved, the settlement could have an estimated value of $4.75 billion. In my second notable mention, CompTIA launches AI learning and certifications, in a story written by Ty Trumbull for Channel E2E. CompTIA responds to the growing demand for AI skills by launching new learning and certification programs. In light of the introduction of ChatGPT in 2022, the need for artificial intelligence skills in the workforce is escalating. These initiatives aim to equip individuals with AI competencies for current and future job markets. The programs offer foundational and specialized courses for different proficiency levels and job roles. Moreover, CompTIA's chief product officer emphasizes the importance of skill-building strategies in the age of AI. The initiative addresses skill gaps and supports career development in the technology industry, reflecting CompTIA's commitment to providing competency-based learning to meet the evolving needs of the workforce.
In my first notable mention from Engadget.com, you can now use ChatGPT without an account. OpenAI has opened access to ChatGPT without requiring users to create an account, aiming to broaden accessibility and provide a glimpse into AI benefits. The move also contributes to gathering more training data for the company. The instant access feature allows users to start ChatGPT 3.5 threads without logging at all. OpenAI assures extra safeguards for accountless users, including blocking certain prompts and image generation. Users can also opt out of data training for prompts when not signed in. This initiative expands ChatGPT's reach, potentially enticing more users to experience the chatbot's capabilities and boosting its already impressive usage statistics worldwide. In my next notable mention from darkreading.com, Microsoft beefs up its defenses in Azure AI. Microsoft announced new upgrades to its Azure AI Studio to strengthen defenses against evolving AI threats. These updates address concerns like prompt injection attacks and ensure the reliability of AI systems. Azure AI Studio enables developers to create customized AI applications using their data. New features, including prompt shields, groundedness detection, safety system messages, safety evaluations, and risk and safety monitoring, help combat issues like prompt manipulation attacks and model hallucinations.
Remember the days when the biggest worry about downloading something from the internet was whether it was the song you wanted or a cleverly disguised virus? Yes, I'm talking about you millennials on LimeWire or Kazaa downloading Gin and Juice by Phish.exe on your parents' computers. Sure, they didn't appreciate that. Well, the game has evolved, and now it's not just about what you're downloading, but whether it should exist in the first place. And now for some words I didn't ever imagine myself saying, but we're talking about AI-generated ghost packages. Yes, these ghost packages are the result of developers turning to AI for some coding advice. It suggests a package that sounds perfect, but there's a twist. This package is straight out of AI's imagination. It's just a hallucination by the LLM. We've actually experienced this here on our shows when we use ChatGPT, and it will simply create stories, or it will create the authors for legit stories that we're trying to use. It creates all this information out of thin air. It's listed right there who wrote the story, but ChatGPT will say Henry Smith. And we've also heard stories of lawyers who were using advice from language models only to find out that they were hallucinating previous lawsuits as precedent. And this is the reality we're navigating, as discovered by Bar Lagnato, the digital detective at Lasso Security. Lagnato uncovered this same chilling truth. Generative AI models, our go-to right now for quick coding solutions, are prone to making stuff up. That's right, including software packages. To test the waters, Lagnato crafted a package named Hugging Face-CLI, and it's a figment of AI fantasy. Lo and behold, it was lapped up by thousands of developers. How did this happen? Why would he craft this Hugging Face-CLI? To clarify, programmers who were turning to LLMs to automate some of their work were getting back code that called on a non-existent package called Hugging Face-CLI. And this is to install a command line interface to use Hugging Face. And there is a proper Hugging Face-CLI package, which is installed using pip install -u Here's the catch. Hugging Face underscore hub, open bracket, CLI, close bracket. But the LLMs were incorrectly calling on pip install Hugging Face dash CLI. And it's kind of a small oversight maybe to you and I if we're not doing coding, but it's one that opens a huge gaping vulnerability for those that used it. And this code with the non-existent package went out into actual releases from these developers. And as crafty as Lanyata was, as he discovered the reoccurring package in the existing software, he decided to test the waters to see if he could create and upload an actual Hugging Face dash CLI to the Python package index. And lo and behold, it worked. There are plenty of amazing upcoming events taking place across the community, so let's see what's happening this week. On Tuesday the 9th of next week at 1 p.m. Eastern Time, boost your MRR in 60 days with Sassonomics, presented by SAS Alerts. And also on Tuesday, an in-person event, the Cyber Defense Lab built for MSPs in Houston, Texas. And then running Wednesday and Thursday, the 10th and 11th, another in-person event, Channel Pro SMB Summit in Orlando, Florida. And coming from the MSP Media Network this week, we have later today at 11 o'clock, we'll have another episode of MSP Community Live for you, followed by a new episode of 38 at 38 later today at 5 o'clock p.m. And then look out on Saturday morning at 10 a.m. Eastern for a standalone episode of MSP Dispatch.
Hi, I'm Aaron, and I'm a jobaholic. We all have something in common. We all have a worst job story. Each episode, I'll welcome one guest to share their most insane worst job story. And in return, I'll share one of mine. Join me the first Friday of every month for new episodes of 38 at 38.
So how'd you like today's show? If you liked it, hit the thumbs up button. If you didn't, hit it 3, 5, 7 times. You know the deal. And if you want to hear more, go ahead and hit the subscribe button on the YouTubes or your favorite podcatcher. Did you know we also have a Discord where we post stories all week? You can give us your own stories and even vote on which ones we'll cover. As my friend Rich Banky says, make sure to tell a friend. Also, be sure to follow us on social media at MSP Media TV. Have any questions? Email news@mspmedia.tv for answers on the next episode, or leave us a voicemail, 833-MSP-Network. All right, Tony. We're all going to go commit to NIST that we're going to help them with their backlog. Microsoft is getting the finger pointed at them for doing bad stuff on the interwebs. You feeling good about today?
Don't forget our B-reel. If you haven't seen the B-reel, the outtakes footage that's following this, which you're listening to right now, today is gold.
I'm just saying, we're professionals. So
professional. Let's close it up. Go.
And with that, ladies and gentlemen, take care of yourselves and each other.
Be safe and stay educated, everyone.
This has been a broadcast of the MSP Media Network.
But for now, Tony, I know we have a lot of stories we want to cover. I'm sure you have a backlog of stories. Can you pull something out and like, you know, give us some news? Give us your next story, please.
Well, it was really weird because it's your story, but I was going to lead into you, but...
Oh, shit. What happened?
I was going to say, man, we got a lot of stuff we got to catch up on. Can you imagine if you fell behind? What would you do? How about this? How about we'll just cut right before you say that?
Tony, last time I led myself in, do you mind if I lead you into the notables?
No, but I'd actually like story number three. Story three would be cool. Story number three would be nice. Ray, this is awesome. This is so awesome. Just a little recap for everyone out there. The first story,
like, I was supposed to lead Ray into the next story, but he let himself into it. And then there was this weird moment of, oh yeah. So now Ray just jumped over the lead in of my next story and just jumped through me into notables. So
listen, if you can't, if you want it done right, you do it yourself.
I don't even know where this is going now.
I don't either. I just, yeah, this is so bad. All right. I can lead you it. Okay. That's
okay. So last time,